Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to Spark. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to spend some time with you, and I thank you for investing your time to learn about some valuable strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge. And I thank you for bearing with me with the new allergy medication that I'm on, and hopefully the voice will last for our full exciting hour that we have this evening. We have an amazing man with us tonight. Kevin Eikenberry is the Chief Potential Officer of the Kevin Eikenberry Group, a learning consulting company that provides a wide range of services, including organizational consulting, training delivery and design, speaking, facilitation, and performance coaching services. And I asked Kevin if he would spend some time talking with us tonight about leading from where you are, and he graciously accepted. And so we'd like to say welcome to Spark, Kevin.
Good evening, Melanie. I'm glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And it sounds like you found a good place on your travels tonight.
I'm actually back in my office. I was able to get back here before time came for us to start, so I'm in my office and happy to be with you.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I know that there's so much that we could talk to your book, Remarkable Leadership, Unleashing Your Leadership Potential, One Skill at a Time, which I did post with the show segment so people can find the book. And so let's just start with, how do you define remarkable leadership, Kevin?
Well, let's pull it apart, and let's talk about leadership, and then we can put the modifier on it. How's that? You know, when I think about leadership, the thing that I think about is that it is both a noun and a verb. It is something that we may be, a leader. It's also something that we do. And so when I think about leadership, I think about it being something that any of us can do. And when we do it, we're really in the mode of trying to change the world. I often say that leadership, the status quo requires no leadership. And so leaders are really all about helping move toward a desired future that's different than where we are today. And when we put the word remarkable on top of that, it's a modifier that says, you know, these are people that are really good at it. These are people that are continuing on a path to become more exceptional, more advanced, more competent, more confident, put whatever word you want on it, but all of that to me means being remarkable. So I believe that it is our opportunity and our responsibility to lead, and if we're going to do that, we might as well do that to the best of our possible ability, which means let's move toward being remarkable.
And that sounds wonderful. And as I said in the description for this segment, especially for those people who may not have a leadership title, what is your perspective about the role of leadership for an average person, say?
Well, you know, I think it's an excellent question because from my perspective, Melanie, leadership is not about a title at all, because we probably all have experience with people that had a title, a vice president or director or team leader or whatever that might be, that implies that they are a leader by title, but that doesn't mean that they're actually doing the things that are required to have people follow. So to me, being a leader requires that someone is choosing to follow you. And so really all of us, I believe, have opportunities, whatever our job is, to be a leader. I can think when I was in high school of a gentleman who was a custodian, and although by no stretch of his job title or stated job description, although I never read it, would it have said that he was a leader, there's no question that he led. There's no question that he led when people came into the building and he was able to be an ambassador. There's no question that he led by example with students. And so really, regardless of our job title, regardless of our role in an organization, regardless of our age, we can lead. If we see an opportunity for something to be better or different, and we can engage others and so in such a way that they choose to follow us in that path, then we're leading. So it's really, as I said before, Melanie, much more about a set of behaviors than it is about a job title or a set responsibility based on what we get paid to do.
Well, and I think that brings up an amazingly powerful point about leadership being a set of behaviors, because a number of behaviors can be learned and unlearned. And so if someone wanted to be more effective as a leader, they could find resources to do that, such as Remarkable Leadership. What inspired you to write Remarkable Leadership, Kevin?
Well, so first of all, that would be a really good place to start, don't you think? Just with the book. Actually, if I can, I want to say something about what you just said, because I think it's so important, and I don't want people to miss it. And that is that the skills of being a great leader or of being a leader at all are skills. They are behaviors, which means they can be learned. And if we didn't believe that, then no one, me included, would have ever written a book about leadership. This, you know, a lot of people listening, or some people listening, may be thinking, well, that all sounds great, but I wasn't born with the skills to make me an effective leader. And I would say to that, think again. Because in all reality, the reason that I wrote the book, or certainly one of the reasons that I wrote the book, was to help give people a roadmap, to help give people tools and techniques to help them develop their leadership skills, regardless, Melanie, of where they're starting from. You know, regardless of their current experience, whether they're already a CEO or whether they're a high school student or anywhere in between, that I believe with all of my heart that the skills of leadership are learnable. I believe with all of my heart that we all were given a unique set of talents that we can craft and use to become successful as leaders. And so my goal in writing the book was to provide resources and provide ideas and provide inspiration to help people on that path, on their path towards being a remarkable leader.
Well, and one of the things that really impressed me about the book, Kevin, is that not only are there ideas in the book, but like you said, it's a roadmap and it's filled with specific actions that people can take to actually practice those 12 competencies. Can you talk a little bit about the thought you put into designing the book that way?
Sure, I sure can. I've had some people, the two highest compliments I've gotten about the book, one was from people that know me that said, Kevin, when I read it, it sounds like you're talking to me, and that's, I think, high praise. But the other thing, to your point specifically, is that I've had people tell me it's like a workshop in a book. And, you know, what I tried to do in writing the book was to create a learning experience in the reading process. What I try to do is take everything that I know about how we learn and apply it to the book. So throughout the book, at every juncture along the way, there are what we call the now steps. And so you've just read a section. Here's what you can do right now. As a leader, you can put the book down and go apply these things in this way, literally, in many cases, immediately. So we know that learning is an active process, and so in order for a book to be really valuable, we have to apply it. I've had people say, well, that book changed my life, and I would say the book didn't change your life. The ideas in the book that you put into action changed your life, and so that's what I was trying to do with this book, as you mentioned, is to make it as actionable as we could. And we've also provided about 50-some places in the book where people can go off to the website, off to a specific website, put in a keyword and get additional tools and techniques and checklists and that sort of thing. So when you read the book with however many pages it is, there's really about a third that much more book that's available to people, you know, online as addendums, if you will. And again, that was a conscious part of my process and my goal for the book, which was to make it accessible, to make it actionable, and to encourage people to get started.
And for the people who listen to Spark regularly, we talk a lot about taking action on something that you learned, because otherwise it's just a great idea and you don't truly learn it, you don't own it until you act on it. And so having that opportunity in the book to do those now steps, and for people who want additional information to be able to go out to the website and get more, is a powerful bonus to that learning process. And so the learning doesn't have to stop just with what they've read in the book. And we'll talk a little bit later about some other powerful tools that you have to help leaders continue to grow and develop, because like anything, learning is lifelong, and none of us ever become done with those things that we truly want to be skilled and good at. We're always learning.
I would and completely agree with that, yeah.
And so we will get to some of those other pieces. I want to talk just a little bit about how passion fits in with leadership, because my regular listeners also will know. We talk about the passion test as a tool to gain clarity about their passions, those top five things that are most important in their lives right now, and putting their focus there. How does passion fit into successful leadership?
Well, first of all, I mean, you know that I'm also familiar with the passion test, and so I'm a big supporter of that, and I'm just so glad that you had the chance to chat with your listeners on a regular basis about some of those things. When I think about leadership, I recognize how complex it is, and I recognize sometimes that people may think, I can't be a great leader because it's just too big of a thing, and I think our passions absolutely come into this. Our passions and our natural gifts come into this process. So let me talk about that a little bit. So when you think about something as complex as leadership, then you know you can slice and dice it however you want. You know, as you mentioned already, 13 competencies in the book Remarkable Leadership. Other books, you know, 5 competencies, 8 things, whatever. But however you choose to slice it, it is a complex thing, and so there's more than one way to be a great leader. It's not like you can identify a leader that's the perfect leader, and so then you want to emulate them exactly. It's not going to work. You're not Martin Luther King Jr. You're not Mother Teresa. You're not John F. Kennedy. You're not whoever you might pick, and we could go on and on with the list, right? You're not that person. You can't be exactly them. So the way our passions fit into this is we need to be aware of our natural gifts. We need to be aware of those things we're most passionate about, and use those things to help guide us to becoming the leader we were meant to be. So that doesn't mean that we ignore maybe a glaring weakness or a fatal flaw that we need to be working on, but I would say that we are definitely ahead, generally speaking, beyond the need to get past a fatal flaw in our skill set or a major limiting factor. Beyond that, what we need to do is focus on the things that we love most, the skills that we are most excited and confident and passionate about, and continue to build our skills in those areas. Because if all we do is try to get a little better here, a little better here, a little better there, that's a fine process. But the way that we're defined as a leader, Melanie, is by those things we're best at. And so if I ask, for example, if I ask all of those of you listening to make a list of, think of a great leader, and then think of what makes them great, what you're going to be writing down is defining what's great about them, which defines them as a leader. So when you think of a great leader, you think of what they're best at. And so we want those that follow us to do the same thing. And so we can use our passions. We can use our natural gifts, talents, and abilities as a guidepost to help us find those places where we want to focus and continue to spend the most time in our development, focusing more on strengths than on weaknesses, certainly not entirely on strengths, but more time spent on strengths, passions, and focus there more so than on the areas of weakness and spending all of our time trying to shore up an area that we're not quite as good at.
Well, and that fits with Buckingham's work on strengths.
Absolutely.
And Strengths Finder, and to really focus on strengths. And for people for whom that's a brand new thought, what are some strategies they might consider in terms of, because again, in some cases, depending on the area of weakness, you can't completely ignore it. Well, what are some strategies that you can use that can help address those areas of weakness while you focus on strengths?
Yeah, you certainly don't want to, you know, I sort of say, think 70-30 strengths, weaknesses, or something along those lines. As it's not like we go into denial. It's not like we forget about those things at all. It's just that's not where we focus the majority of our attention. And that's not always our natural reaction. Our natural reaction is to say, okay, let me give you an example. One of the things that we do, Melanie, is we do 360 assessments with leaders. Based on the competencies in Remarkable Leadership, we help leaders with the process of getting feedback, anonymous feedback, from their peers, their coworkers, those they lead, and their boss. And when that report is created and we get ready to sit down with a leader to go through it, the first thing their natural reaction is to dive into, okay, what do they say I'm not doing well? With good reason, people want to say, okay, to be better, I need to get better at the things I'm worst at. And we need to spend time there. We can't be in denial, as you said. But if we focus all of our attention there, we don't play to our strengths and our passions. So we've got to find, first of all, we've got to find a balance. And so beyond that, it's really identifying those areas that we do want to work on, strength or weakness, and building an action plan for how we can get better at it, whether that's reading a book in that area, whether it's having coaching help in that area, whether that's some other sort of ongoing leadership development process, whether it's having a mentor or on and on and on, having a learning plan around those areas. And I think the starting point is to determine those strengths and weaknesses, and having some sort of a tool like a 360 or a strengths finder type of a tool is a great approach, or even both of those things is a great way to head in that direction.
And for some people, that is eye-opening, to realize that you don't have to be good in everything in order to be successful as a leader. And very often we forget, because we focus on what leaders are very skilled at and what their strengths are, we don't notice as much where their weaknesses fall, because that's not what we focus on. And we forget about that with ourselves, because we tend to be our worst critics.
Right. So if we're not focusing on the weaknesses, as long as they're not fatal issues, right, with others, others aren't doing that with us either. And so we need to recognize that. And the other thing is that we can work on those weakness areas, certainly. But if we only and always work on those, we're never going to reach our full potential. We've got to focus on those areas we're best at, those things that uniquely make us who we are, those things that make us a leader people really want to follow. And so we need to find those things, and we need to capitalize on those and build on them. And the good news about that is that's often easier. But it often does take some sort of a process, Melanie, as you know, or some sort of a way to get people to tell us, hey, these are the things you're really good at. Because oftentimes we downplay those things or don't hear that feedback from others in the natural course of time. So like, how often has someone said to you, man, you're really good at that, and you say, oh, that's just easy. And the reason it's easy is because you're already good at it. The reason it's easy is maybe that's a natural gift of yours. The reason that's easy is a part of your natural style. So we need to recognize that we're really good at those things and say, how can we get even better? Because if we're already in, the top 20% of the population in that area, a little effort puts us in the top 15 or the top 10 or the top 5, and now we're really cooking with gas.
Oh, absolutely. And when people do, like you said, very often, if it's easy for me, it must be easy for everybody. And actually, that's so rarely true, that there are people who are searching for others who have strengths that they don't have. And whatever you seem to do well, that's easy, that you enjoy, is to recognize that there are others for whom that's a challenge and for whom you could fit a need.
Absolutely, and oftentimes the first hint is those people that look at you and say, man, you're really good at that. Because think about when you've said that to someone, often you're saying that somewhat in awe or from a place of the rest of the sentence is, and I'll never be as good at that as you, right? So that's often the clue, and that's often perhaps the person that you could mentor or help. And, one of the ways to get better at something is to help someone else get better at it. You were talking earlier about the book and how we apply the lessons from a book, any book. And the other thing I would add to that is a strategy that we can use, and I know that you know this from being on teleseminars with me before, Melanie, is that one of the things I always tell people in the learning process is if you want to really take advantage of what you've just read or what you've just heard, this call, this show included, is to think of three or four things from this experience from the book that you just read, the chapter you just read, whatever, and teach it to someone else. And when we have to teach it, I'm not necessarily saying to bust out the PowerPoint slides or the flip chart. What I'm suggesting is talk about what you've learned to someone else. Now, what happens there is that they get the benefit of the transfer of knowledge from you, which is great. It's a relationship builder. It's a skill builder. If you're sharing that with others on your team, that's you being a great coach and developer of others. But the other benefit is that when you teach someone else what you've just read or what you've just heard, it's no longer what Kevin said or what Melanie said or what you read in whoever's book. It's now yours because you now own it. You've shared it with someone else. This isn't about plagiarism. This is about gaining ownership of that knowledge. It's no longer something someone told you or you read somewhere. You've now synthesized it, and by sharing it with someone else, you've begun the process of locking that into your consciousness and into your ability to apply.
Which is such a powerful tool when people are learning something new, even if it's just going home and sharing it over the dinner table. But that talking about it, processing it again, and making new connections, not only from what was heard about, whether it's on this show or in a teleseminar, but I know for me, when I've got participants in classes or webinars, and I get the feedback that says, not only is my professional life better, but I'm using this in my personal life. And so the divisions between the compartments of life start to break down, and I think that's true for a lot of the skills and the principles in remarkable leadership, but it's not only about leadership, that it's applicable to life in general.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wrote in the book, and I'm paraphrasing Warren Bennis, the great leadership thinker, is that when we become a better leader, we become a better human, and vice versa. So better leader equals better human equals better leader, which means that the skills in the book really are transferable completely, 100%. They are skills that we can use in all parts of our life. And in fact, I believe we're better off when we quit worrying about, is this professional development or is this personal development? But it, as you said, the lines blur, and it's really about us being more effective. And the great thing is if you read something or learn something about leadership in the session that I was giving today with a group was about strategic communication. And if we're talking about becoming more effective as communicators and we apply those lessons in other parts of our lives, not only do those people and not only do we benefit from that exchange, but it locks in and helps us get better at the skills for any part of our life. So there's no question that you're right on, and I completely agree with you there.
Well, on that related note between blurring the lines between personal and professional and really looking at some parts of our lives over which we do have control, which has to do with language. And you and I have talked about this a little bit before. And again, my listeners at Spark have heard as well the impact of your language choice, both in your thinking and your communication, can be very powerful either in your favor or against you in terms of your leadership success. From your observations, Kevin, what impact have you noticed about language choice on leadership success?
Oh, it's huge. But even before we get to language, we have to think about our own attitude. And, I often ask people, is enthusiasm contagious? And people always say, yes, of course it is. And I say, so is the opposite. So the question is, what do you want to spread? And maybe that's the wrong sort of metaphor right now in the days of swine flu or H1N1 or whatever it's called. But, we have others following us. We have others looking to us more so than we even realize. Our words are considered, reconsidered, analyzed, and more oftentimes by those that follow us, more than we ever will know. And so the choices of words we use are critical to the success of our teams because the words that we use will impact them. I had a person tell me one time, I can tell you what kind of day it's going to be in our plant when by the first things the boss says or by the first things the boss does when they walk in the morning. So that what that person was telling me was the boss's attitude influences mine immediately. And so I think it starts, Melanie, with attitude. which translates into the words that we use, right? So the consciously choosing and consciously finding ways to keep our attitude and our inspiration levels higher is critical for us as a leader. And then that can be reflected in our language, because if we're not consciously staying focused on being positive, then the reality is that we'll probably not be there, and or likely will not be there. So we need to not allow ourselves to be susceptible to the negativity of others, and we need to therefore be the ones that make others' day through our attitude and through our language. So I think it starts with attitude, but it manifests in language, and I think it manifests in more than just language in terms of the things we say, but also into our body language. You know, are you smiling, for heaven's sakes, and that sort of thing. So I think there's a whole lot there. I think it's absolutely critical. I don't think it's often thought about enough. In fact, one of the things that I've just started doing, I think 3 weeks now in a row, on my leadership blog, Unleashing Your Leadership Potential, what I'm trying to do now, and I wrote in the first week, Melanie, that was no promises that I'd stay with it every week, but I'm trying to take Fridays on the blog and write a Friday inspiration, something to get us inspired and re-fired ourselves, and hopefully that can translate into our language.
And that's so important, and that connects to a question that formed while you were talking, which is, when so much of what we're bombarded with is negative, and being able to find those sources that help us reframe and refire our own positive perspective so that we can convey that to other people. And whether that's a website, whether that's a daily inspiration that someone reads or sends out, or in my emails I put a positive thought at the bottom, just because for someone that might be the first time they've heard something positive in the last half a day, because if they start the day with the news, for example, and all the concerns about the recession and now H1N1, and there's so much negativity. That, Kevin, what do you do yourself as a leader to keep your perspective positive?
Well, there's a number of things. And first of all, we decided a long time ago we weren't going to participate in that R thing, that recession thing.
Yay.
So,
I agree with you.
We just made a choice about that in our organization. And but again, that started with me. That started with me saying, I'm not going to participate. That started with me talking about it in our organization. That talks about us not using that word. That talks about it, all of those things, right? It emanates from us as a leader. I think there's a couple of things that I specifically try to do. I probably am a more positive person by nature. And you know, all of us have sort of a natural bent. I do believe that that can be adjusted over time. And I think as leaders, if our natural bent isn't one way, you know, isn't in a positive way, we've got to take even more action, be even more diligent to do that. A couple things. Number one is turn off the news. Don't watch it or don't read it any more than you absolutely have to. And secondly, take it for what it is. Recognize that, you know, every few months you'll read someone somewhere say, why doesn't someone have an all-good news channel? Or why doesn't have, you know, why isn't there an all-positive newspaper? The reality is it isn't going to work because it isn't going to sell. People want to read about train wrecks. They want to read about the negative stuff. That's where the sensationalism comes. The point is all that the news channels are trying to do is get people to watch or listen, and they've learned over the course of human time that that stuff is what sells. So quit watching it. Quit listening to it as much as you can. You know, you need to be an informed citizen, but my bet is that you can be a much more informed citizen in much less time. The second thing about the news in terms of that is recognize what's in your control and out of your control. And so focus on the parts that are or that you can influence or that you want to be able to do something with, and think about the news from that perspective rather than from the perspective of, oh my gosh, it's awful about what happened to those children in wherever in that car accident, or what is happening in New York City on Wall Street or whatever. And the third thing I think that we all need to do, as you said, is and I love getting email from you, Melanie, because you do have great quotes at the bottom, is to find tools that will help you. You know, one of the things that we also do is every Wednesday we send out what's called Power Quotes Plus. And it gives people a quotation, questions to ponder and action steps to take based on that quotation. And of course, the quotation is always something positive. So we're trying to take a positive thought and turn that into proactive action. The other thing that I do on a personal basis is that I try, and I don't succeed every single day, but I try to have what I call my power hour in the morning. And I'll tell you my perfect power hour, and I will also tell you that I'm fallible and it doesn't always happen. But my perfect power hour is an hour that includes 20 minutes of exercise, 20 minutes of reading something uplifting and inspirational, and 20 minutes and 10 to 15 minutes of journaling, maybe a little more reading, a little less journaling, but writing down the insights that I get from what I read, the ideas that come to me while my mind is still clear and quiet and I haven't dove into my day. So the idea of that power hour of, you know, the first 30 to 45 to 60 minutes of your day, I think is critical. Most of us know, whether we're regular exercisers or not, Melanie, that after we exercise we feel better. So if that's true, why don't we do it? And most of us know that when we read something powerful, positive and uplifting, that it helps us think clearer and think better. So if that's true, why don't we do it? So, you know, whether that's, you know, whether you spend that time meditating or praying, whether you spend that time doing yoga, whether you spend that time reading the Bible or Think and Grow Rich or The Magic of Thinking Big or Remarkable Leadership or whatever, you know, we could go right down a list. Wayne Dyer, pick what you want to read. Things that uplift and motivate and inspire you and get you thinking differently and thinking more positive, that's what we need to be doing. And it's not going to happen automatically. We've got to take action to make it happen.
And I think that's very important, is to be able to recognize that that is something that we have control over, is how we start our day. And if that means as parents that we need to get up a little earlier before the family gets going so that we can have some quiet time, because it really does impact. I know with Alex, our 7.5-year-old, if we're rushed in the morning, his behavior reflects that, because his stress level and his cooperation drops. And so most of the time he's very happy in the morning because we take that time to be happy in the morning. But it does make a difference in how you start the day.
And you know, some people are going to say, okay, Kevin, that sounds fine for you. I can never make that happen. And I'd say, you know, maybe it's better for you to do it in the evening. You know, I'm a morning person, right? And I think there's something to be said for doing that and starting your day that way, but maybe that's not the time for you. Maybe the way for you to do it is to get on the treadmill or take your walk or whatever you do to exercise with your headphones in and listening to something uplifting. You know, maybe that's turning off the radio in the car and putting on a music CD that pumps you up. Maybe that's putting on something inspirational and motivational or educational in your car while you're driving. Find the things that work for you, because your attitude is completely in your control, and your response and what you put in your mind is completely in your control. So make the choices to plant the seeds that you want to have grow.
And that does make a world of difference to the people around you, because that's what you put out to others. And so that's a really good point about really honoring the time that's best for you. So whether that's morning, whether that's what you do over your lunch hour, or whether that's what you do at night, it is important to take that time and refocus on where you do have control. Because if you really focus on what you don't have control over, you lose the perspective and forget that you really are a leader in a variety of ways. And so now I've written notes all over my questions. So I have to go back and read through my notes here. We were talking about, wanted to share some success stories from people that you've worked with who have grown as leaders, because it's really inspirational, especially for people who maybe up until now really haven't considered themselves leaders.
So the question is, what are some examples or some success stories?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, you know, the first thing that came, I was thinking about this person earlier, and I chose not to try to search my blog while we were chatting because I wanted to be coherent. But I wrote about a young boy, I think he was about 9, back in December, and this young boy is from a small town in Indiana, And he wondered. I think he watched the lighting of the Christmas tree at the White House, or he saw that a number of towns had Christmas trees in their towns, and in his small town there was no tree. And he wondered aloud to his parents why there's no tree. Why don't we have a tree in our town? At the center of town or wherever. And so his parents, as most parents probably would do, they sort of said they didn't really know and didn't really say much about it. But the next day or two, he kept talking about it, and to the parents' great credit, they said, "Well, if we're serious about a tree, then what we need to do is talk to the city manager." So they took their son down, and the young boy talked to city government about it, and they said, "Well, that's a good idea. So would you come back to town council meeting?" Which he did, and so this, I believe, 9-year-old boy talked to the town council and told them why it was that he thought they ought to have a tree. And the next thing you know, people are donating things, and a tree was placed, and the tree was lit, and at the lighting ceremony, guess who flipped the switch? This young boy. And so, to me, it's a great story of leadership, and it's a great example of us leading from where we are, regardless of our age. And I think it's an instructive thing for us to consider in that regard. I mean, I think we can. I could list 100 stories, I suppose, of people who have taken leadership regardless of their role, regardless of their stated job title. And I think that would be, and I think all of you, if you think of it, you can come up with those stories too. And so that's another example or another way for us to be inspired, as you said, Melanie, by looking at those situations, finding those stories. And that's another great approach, and that is, read the stories of great leaders. I think this year it's especially fashionable for a number of reasons to be a student of Abraham Lincoln. And I have read a couple of more books about Lincoln in the past few months. In fact, I'm finishing one right now. Read books of other leaders that you appreciate or that you look up to. And I think that you will find those examples everywhere. And in fact, a great challenge or a great opportunity is to listen to the news looking for leadership lessons as opposed to listening to the news for all the bad news that's there. I often get feedback on my blog when I write about our new president, sometimes from people who don't agree with President Obama. And my point in writing it never is to be partisan or to say he's right or he's wrong on his policy. That's not my intention. My intention is to say there's stuff that's happening, and we can watch our president as a world leader and as a leader for things he's doing right or maybe not doing quite so right. And I've written about both, but not from a place of he has the right policy or not, but from the place of leadership to say, what could we learn from this? What could we do with this? How could we become a more effective leader based on what we're observing in him?
And that's another wonderful strategy, to learn from the people around us that, what are they doing well? What is working well for them? And to realize that the limitations that we place on ourselves are truly only our limitations. Whether it's the 9-year-old boy, or whether it's the neighbor down the street, or whether it's an inspiration from someone who's helping people in Africa. But that when we look at those people and say, if they're doing that, what's limiting me?
Yeah, there's two good strategies there. One is to have the mindset that says I can learn from everybody and everyone has a lesson to teach me, which means if we believe that, then our minds are more open and looking for those things, right?
Yeah.
Your thought for the day, the last email I got from you said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, and that's from Wayne Dyer, and it's absolutely right. So if you go out into the world expecting to find lessons, you'll find them if you start looking for them, and so that's half of that equation. The other half of that equation is look for things that people do especially well that you admire. And that doesn't mean that you have to admire all of their behavior or even agree with them or even like them. But if you see things that people do well, what you want to do is say, how can I learn from them? Again, even if I don't like them. And going back to the president, you know, we get comments on my blog that say, you know, why would you hold this man up as a leader, blah, blah, blah. That's irrelevant. The message is in what's the learning, not in the behavior, not in the political position. And it's the same thing with your neighbor who you may or may not like, but they may have a skill that you can acknowledge and you can learn from. That should be, you know, be a collector, be an observant collector of the lessons, and know that the lessons literally can come from anyone, whether it's a 9-year-old boy or whether it's an 89-year-old grandmother.
Absolutely. And as you said, then we are more open and there are more possibilities that we see when we are looking for lessons and opportunities, which goes back to that choice of attitude and choice of perspective that we talked about earlier. And so,
well, let me just tell you a story, I think, that goes along with that, and it makes a really important point. Several years ago, I'm driving down the road. My family's in the car with me. I'm driving down the road outside of Washington, D.C., busy, lots of traffic on a road hadn't been on prior to that, so I'm paying close attention to the road. And all of a sudden, my son, sitting behind me, he's probably about, I don't know, 11 at the 12 at the time, he hits me on the shoulder and says, "Slug bug black, no tag backs." Now, at the time, those of you listening are probably all know this game. I'll explain it in a second. But at the time, I did not know this game, the slug bug game. And the slug bug game is when you see a Volkswagen Beetle, that's the bug, you hit the other person, that's the slug, and you tell them what color of car you saw, and then that's the game. So slug bug black, no tag backs means Parker hit me on the shoulder, said he saw a black Volkswagen. Now, I'm not real fond of being hit, period, especially by my son, especially while I'm driving, so I'm not real thrilled, and I'm trying to just figure out what's going on, and everyone else in the car is laughing because they know I'm the only person in North America that doesn't know the game. Slug bug. I've since learned that it's sometimes called punch buggy and other sorts of things, but the point is, this is the game, okay? Mm-hmm. So we started talking about this in the car. I said, "I don't like this hitting part, but I'm as game for a game as anybody, and you know I'm more competitive than most. So let's play this game. We'll say slug bug. We just won't hit each other, and we'll see who finds the most Volkswagens." Well, you know what happens in the rest of the story. Everywhere we go, we see Volkswagens, because it's just like the experience that all of us listening have had before when we bought a new car, and we drove it off the lot, new or new to us. And suddenly, everyone has, I don't know, a blue Toyota Camry because you just drove off the lot in your blue Toyota Camry. It doesn't mean that everyone has a Camry that bought them the same day you did. It means that now you're noticing them. Why are you noticing them? You're noticing them because you're consciously or unconsciously looking for them. We have this thing in our brain called the reticular activating system. And Melanie, what that does is it's a filter that says to our conscious mind, subconscious, "I'm interested in this, let it show up." It's the same thing that happens when we hear a new vocabulary word or hear about a new song or movie or television show, and then it seems like we hear it five more times in the next 3 days. So all of you listening, you're going to see more Volkswagen Beetles, slug bugs, tomorrow than you ever imagined possible. Why? Because now it's been raised in your consciousness. So the whole point of finding the lessons starts with looking for the lessons. So literally, our brains are built that we will find what we're looking for. So my question to you is, as a leader, what do you want to look for? What do you want to look for in terms of lessons? What do you want to look for in terms of behaviors in others to give them feedback on? You know, if you find yourself not giving enough positive feedback, for example, are you looking for those things that you can give feedback on? Or are you only noticing the things people are doing wrong because that's how you set your brain? What are you looking for? What do you want to find? What you look for, you will find.
And I'm sure that my regular listeners are smiling because they've heard me talk about the RAS, which is what I call the reticular activating, and how powerful that is. It's like radar for your mind. And it's always nice to hear it come from multiple sources because then people go, "Oh, it's not just Melanie."
Well, I'm sorry that I'm preaching to the choir.
No, that's okay because it's a great reinforcement about how powerful that part of our brain truly is. that we do see what we put our attention on and what we focus on. And so that's why two people can be side by side, having, you know, they're doing the same job in the same place, but they have totally different experiences.
No doubt about it. 100% true.
And that led me to another question when you were talking about traveling with your family, about the role of parents as leaders. Because often parents don't think about the fact that really they are leaders for the other members of their family, particularly their children.
Well, a couple of things about that. One is I find often when I'm doing sessions on leadership, whether they're over the phone or whether they're, you know, in an in-person workshop, I find myself using examples from as a parent often. And I use those for two reasons. One is because most people in my group can associate with them. Certainly we all can, either as a student, as a child, or as a parent. And so I use them from that perspective. But I use them, too, because I think the lessons are equally valuable. And often the things that I'm not saying that they are exactly the same, being a leader of others and being a parent, but I'm saying that there's a lot more similarities than we might give ourselves credit for. I can tell you, Melanie, while writing the book, that I often thought, am I doing what I'm suggesting here as a leader? And even double, am I doing these things as a parent? So when I use an example in one of my books about my kids, or when I use an example in that regard, I often am thinking, okay, how well am I living up to this myself? And I think it's a great question for us to consider and think about as parents and as leaders. But to your point, we can use the skills that we learn as a leader in our parental role and vice versa, and in both cases, therefore, becoming more successful in both situations.
And I think you mentioned this in one of the teleseminars that I listened to in the Remarkable Leadership Boot Camp, which had to do with, are we taking our best selves home, or are we just doing being our best selves at work or in our leadership role? And it may not have been worded quite that way, but it is that idea about we really are conscious of how we interact with people when we're in the workplace and maybe not so conscious when we are at home.
Well, you know, it's so often it's easy, you know, it's hardest sometimes to be at our best with those we're closest to because we're not as conscious. And the reality is that we, you know, if we do raise our voices, one of my things, right, sometimes I raise my voice with my children even when I don't feel like I am, but they perceive it as such. We let probably much more often than I ever would with those that I work with, certainly more than I ever would with a customer. And the sad thing is that, you know, those people at home are those that I care the most about. And so whatever that thing or things are for you, we often are lulled into a comfort because those are the people that we're around the most, we care the most about. And the reality is, although we probably get more of a pass from them than we might from a customer or a team member, the reality is that we need to practice those skills both places. And as you, to use your words, take our best selves home with us, not only because those people deserve it, but because as we continue to practice that, we deepen the habits and the skills in both areas of our lives.
And I think that is very true, because that does then truly become part of who we are when it becomes our natural first response. And it does that through practice.
Absolutely. And so, you know, people will say, does practice make perfect? And I say, no, all practice does is make permanent. And so if we're practicing the wrong skills half of the time, then we're only building the skill we want half as well. You know, the only thing that makes perfect is perfect practice. So if we really want to perfect something, we got to practice it the same way with spaced repetition all the time, both at home and at work.
Well, and it's interesting because I have to laugh because so much of what you and I say is so similar. When I do seminars with people and I talk about that practice doesn't make perfect, they look at me with this very strange look because that's what they've been taught all their life, is that practice makes perfect. And when we talk about that, no, practice makes permanent, they go, oh. So I said, and so only perfect practice works, and very rarely do we get it perfectly correct the first time. And we need to give ourselves permission to make mistakes when we're learning and to make the changes on the path rather than giving up and saying, oh, I can't do it. Well, no, I just need to tweak it a little bit and try it again. And so the more practice that we have, the more skilled we become. if we give ourselves permission to make those mistakes.
I could not possibly agree with you more. And there's more and more research out there that says that to become really world class at something, it's all about purposeful practice. It's about finding those ways and working hard to build the capacity, to build the competence, to build the confidence, and that requires us to keep doing it. We're not going to, you know, our natural gifts only take us so far. And so to get really excellent requires us to continue to practice those things, doing them well and doing them right, and continuing to practice them. And that takes us back to our strength stuff. Practicing those strengths, getting better and better and better and better at those things is really the key.
Absolutely. And we only have about 10 minutes left, Kevin. And so I need to throw our number back out there for any of our listeners who want to call with questions. Our number is 347-215-8390, or you can put a question into the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio. I have some more questions for Kevin. I'd much rather ask yours. So give us a call or type in a question if you have one for Kevin. And Kevin, I have a number of listeners who listen to this segment in the archives because of their schedules. And so if they're listening to this later and they want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Well, there's lots of ways. Certainly, if they want more information specifically on the book, I know that you've got it on the website there, but they can go to remarkableleadershipbook.com. If you go to remarkableleadershipbook.com, you can get excerpts of chapters. You can get a sample chapter all for free, lots of stuff there. If you want a special offer specifically because you listen to this call, all you need to do is, or if you have any other question for me, you can send me an email directly. It'll come directly to me to Kevin at KevinEikenberry.com. So Kevin at Kevin, EikenBerry.com. And if you send me a note and say, hey, listen, I heard you on Blog Talk Radio with Melanie on Spark, then we'll make sure we make a special offer, make something specially available to you. What I'll do is I'll put a couple of special reports on leadership and send those to you and let you know some other ways that we can help in that regard. But feel free to contact me there, Kevin at KevinEikenberry.com, if you have specific questions for me. We've got a whole host of websites, certainly for the book, as we've talked about, remarkableleadershipbook.com. You can go to KevinEikenberry.com to learn more about the entirety of our business at the Kevin Eikenberry Group. And, you know, something that you've mentioned, Melanie, a couple times, and I've alluded to as well, is our Remarkable Leadership tools and learning systems. And you can get some sense of those at remarkable-leadership.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for that special offer. It's always nice for listeners to get a bonus because they're here, in addition to the great lessons and the information that they get. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
For making that available. In the last few minutes that we have, is there a particular event or program that you have coming up that listeners might be interested or might be able to participate in with you?
Well, I want to be aware that not everyone will listen to this at the same time. So we have an ongoing series of things that are always happening in terms of our Remarkable Leadership Learning System. Membership in that learning system at various levels includes a variety of teleseminars, guest teleseminars where I have guest experts on with me, where I'm sort of, Melanie, in some ways in the role that you are on this call, and a variety of other things. And so we have at least two live teleseminars every month. And so what I will make sure that I do for anyone that sends me a note and says, hey, I listened to you with Melanie, then I'll let you know about what those next upcoming events are, and that'll be part of the offer I'll make you, is I'll make sure that you get a chance to listen to one of those for free to get a sample of what we're up to. But we've always got stuff going on. We've got a couple of things that are coming up soon that I can't quite announce yet because they're not quite ready to announce. But we're going to be creating a couple of new products that I think are going to be pretty exciting. And, you know, once people let us know that they're interested, we can make sure that we let them know about those things as they happen.
Oh, great. because one of the things that when I first met you, Kevin, oh my gosh, several years ago now, at the ASTD International Conference, was the fact that it wasn't just the book that you had coming out of Remarkable Leadership, it was a complete system that you had of ongoing learning and action plans and resources, so that people who were really committed to becoming remarkable leaders had tools beyond the book. And
yeah,
I think that powerfully to your commitment to helping people develop their leadership potential.
Yeah, and so just to say a little bit more about that, to add to that, you know, the book, as we've talked about, 13 competencies of being a great leader, 12 of which, one of those is remarkable leaders are continual learners. So what we've done is taken the other 12 and we've laid them out, and each month we dive deeper into one skill inside of that competency to help leaders focus on one skill at a time, one month at a time, to move toward their potential as a remarkable leader. So that's really our strategy, is to continue to have new content on a new leadership skill every month to help people continue on their path.
Which is so powerful. And Kevin, we've got about 4 minutes left. So in a couple of those 4 minutes, what is it that you would like listeners to take away from either the core around being a remarkable leader, or if you could summarize just in a few sentences what message you would want people to take away from our interview tonight?
It's real simple, Melanie. I believe, and I'll speak to everyone listening, and that is that you are, that you have the skills that it takes. You have the innate ability to be a leader, and all you must do is claim that and get on a path of learning to be a more effective leader every day. It will require effort to get better. It's a lifelong journey. The role of being a leader and the skills of leadership are complex and many, but you have it inside of you. All of us are born with the skills, are born with the potential to become a successful leader, and that includes you. Regardless of your experience up till now, regardless of your income, regardless of your job title, regardless of your age, you have the innate abilities to be a great leader. It's whether you choose to accept the work and effort and focus required to make that happen. So that's my belief, and people often ask me what makes my book on leadership different than 20 more on the shelf, and I would say, when you read the book, I hope that you will know that if there's anyone that believes it's possible for you to be a successful leader, it's me. And so I may have never met you, but I believe it's possible for you, and oftentimes we need someone else to believe in us first. And so just know that you've got that person, and it's me, and it's also Melanie. So you got two people, and you've got an awfully good start.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for investing this hour here at Spark. It's been inspiring, it's been informative, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I've been glad to be with you. I've been looking forward to this, and I hope that for all of you listening, it was valuable and helpful. And as I said, just send me an email, kevin@kevineichenberry.com. We'll let you know. We'll take good care of you, I promise.
Oh, and I know he will, because he's taking good care of me and the work that I have done with him. So thank you so much again, Kevin, for being with us. And to my listeners, if you are listening to this before Saturday, May 9th, please visit brainbonanza.com to take a look at the Choose Your Stress webinar that's happening on Saturday, so that you can learn how to choose the level of stress that you experience in your life. So thank you so much for being here with us tonight on Spark, and may you take an action on something that you've learned, that you've heard here, whether it's emailing Kevin, whether it's checking out the book or the website, remarkableleadershipbook.com, or it's visiting Brain Bonanza to see other resources that can support you to create the life that you truly desire. Thank you so much. Have a great week, Kevin, and have a great week, everyone.
Thanks, Melanie.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Ms. Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.